You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702.
Series Edition.
I'm so excited to bring you episode 3 of our series that we've been having for the month of April. And this month's series is all about marathon running. We're in week 3 of our marathon running series with Bruce Fordyce. He's an author. He's also a 9-time Comrades winner. And during that time, by the way, he set 5 new Comrades course records. And he has 30 Comrades. He's run 30 Comrades to date under his belt. As he keeps saying, yes, with a bit of an injured knee, but he still continues to run. And he estimates that he has run about 200,000 kilometers in the course of his life. That's a hell of a lot. He launched the Park Run concept in Southern Africa, and it's grown to 200 Saturday morning 5-kilometer free timed runs with over 1 million registered members across the country. And many of you obviously cannot wait for the Park Run to return, because it's wonderful for neighborhoods, it's wonderful to connect, but of course to keep an active lifestyle. And when Bruce launched his book, Winged Messenger, Running Your First Comrades Marathon, we congratulated him and of course said, do you think someone who can do a 5-kilometer run, a 10-kilometer run, can go on to do Comrades? And he said, hell yeah, that's what the book is about. It's for novices and those that have been running for some time. And he joins us now today for our third episode. Hello, Bruce.
Afternoon, Zanya.
Yes, lovely to be with you again. You know, I was going through your book and just looking at the detail with which you wrote it, the diary, and the beauty of it is that you take us through it month by month, literally month by month. We get to see your journey from when you started running to when you ran your first Comrades. So a really great read, easy.
Thank you, Zanya.
Yeah, so perfectly put together. So let's get into today's topic. It's about training and preparation.
Training.
One of the questions that's come up in previous weeks that we've had to postpone is around shoes, running shoes. How do we choose our running shoes?
So one of the things that people, perhaps novices, get distracted by is that they see the top runners in the world, and they think whatever that person is wearing, I must get a pair. So for instance, at the moment, Eliud Kipchoge from Kenya is without a doubt the dominant marathon runner in the world at the moment, and might actually be considered the greatest marathon runner of all time. But what Eliud wears might not suit you, because what's one of the secrets, which I did discuss in my book in Winged Messenger, is that one of the gifts of being a good runner is discovering what your personal biomechanics are and what suits you. And we are all slightly different the way we hit the ground when we're running. And so certain shoes might not suit you at all. And in my own case, I discovered that I am what you call a heavy pronator. That means I run on the inside of my foot. If you look at me, I've got some video material coming up, Polly Shorts. I look like I'm running on my ankles, on the inside of my ankle. That's how much my foot is turning over.
Sure.
So I need a shoe that is supportive and holds my foot up. And Eliud Kipchoge, looking at him, he needs a light racing shoe that actually he'd be better off probably running barefoot. He's so fast. But so what you need to do is don't necessarily think of price and getting it at the cheapest possible price, but go to the experts, go to the running shoe stores that specialize in running shoes and ask them to fit you out. And they will show you a dazzling and bewildering rack of shoes and models and brands, and you won't know what to do. So they will ask you to walk or run in the shop or in the corridor outside or in the road outside. They'll look at you and they'll say, right, you can ignore all those ones over there on the left. None of those are going to suit you. You need this shoe. And so I think that's probably, and relatively our sport is cheap. The one investment that you do need to make is in a good running shoe. And I know some of my old colleagues who fell in love with a particular model, when they suddenly realized that it was going to be taken off the market, they would go to the running shoe shop and buy 15 pairs. They could sort themselves out for the next 5-10 years.
Yes, and the shoe they trust. How many big toenails have you lost over the years?
Wow. So in my first Comrades Marathon, I lost them all. I lost all 10. You've got to remember this is back in the 1970s, and we had a couple of brands in those days and a couple of models in each brand. And those models weren't different types of shoes. They were just different colors. You could get the shoe in blue or in red or possibly in white. And they had big, heavy toe boxes that just crunched our toes after we'd run 90 kilometers. So I lost all my toenails, and it wasn't fun 6 months later. So Comrades was in at the end of May, early June in those days. At 6 months later at Christmas, I was still putting little bits of cardboard into my growing toenails to try and direct them out properly so they didn't get ingrown. It's not fun. Mm. So after that, what I did is that I cut the toe box off my running shoes completely. And so when you're, you know, I know that people want to look fashionable and look good, but running isn't always about looking fashionable and having the best gear. It's about comfort. And I prefer to keep my toenails, even if people do laugh at my shoes. Those, by the way, I don't do that with my ordinary running shoes that I ran in this morning. I've got a very, very nice pair of running shoes. I wouldn't hack them to pieces, but for the marathon, I hack a shoe to piece. I actually get stuck in with a knife and a saw, and I customize it for that because it's 90 kilometers and it's a tough 90 kilometers.
Absolutely. All right. So you have that, you have your toes peeking out at the front.
They peek out. Well, you can see on the videos that I've got of myself actually with the sock on. Mm-hmm. So you can see the sock flapping around and my toes sticking out. That's just me. I picked that up from the old timers, by the way, because they used to run in old tennis tackies.
Yes.
And those tennis tackies had a rubber toe cap, which butchered your toe. So they cut that off. And I saw that photograph of Wally Hayward, one of those greats, one day with that. And I thought, well, if he can do it, I'm going to do the same.
Yes. You've often talked about running with friends or running with the club. Now that you mention the people you learned from, you joined the Wits Club. You ran with the Wits Club. What's the value in that? What's the value in being part of a club or running with someone?
It's massive. It's massive. So my first 6 months when you read the book, Zanny, was on my own. And that was because I was too frightened and too embarrassed to join the Wits Marathon Club because I thought they'd be too good for me and too fast and I'd be way out of my depth. But at the start of the new academic year going into 1977, I had no choice because you had to be a member of a club. So I joined them with fear and trepidation and actually found out that I was fitter than any of them. And I killed them in one or two of the early runs. The guys who are still my mates, they still laugh about that first run, where they said they were a bit irritated that I pitched up for a training run because they thought they're going to have to look after the new boy. And 3/4 of the way through the run, my mate Jack Snayman said he suddenly realized he was going to have to look after himself because I was going fast. But the thing with meeting other people is, first of all, it's fun. You know, everyone thinks we're an individual sport. We're not. We're one of the most social sports on the planet. And I love the company of other people. I love gossiping, talking, telling jokes, and running on your own and telling yourself a joke that you already know that the punchline. I mean, that's fun. Or telling yourself gossip that you've already heard. So running with a group is great. It makes the run more enjoyable. Shared discipline is a lot easier than individual discipline. If you know you're meeting people, I know that I was meeting my friends this morning. They would have given me 3 to 5 minutes to arrive on our deadline for setting off. And if I hadn't, they would have left and I would have had a flurry of messages on my phone later saying, where were you? Lazy, slept in. Oh, the wind was blowing. Shame. So there's, you know, shared discipline. It makes you get there. And then finally, actually, there's a safety factor. Unfortunately, in South Africa, particularly in the dark, it's not a great idea to be running on your own. And a couple of years ago, I was actually mugged 200 meters from my house, which was a really, really frightening experience. So it probably would have helped a lot if I'd been with a group, I wouldn't have been attacked. None of us would have been. So those are the reasons. And then they also, your fellow runners serve as a gauge of your own standard of running. And so in my Comrades Marathon days, my running friends used to say, "Whoa, Bruce, you know, 2 weeks to go," they say, "we think you're going to win because we can't stay with you on the hills anymore." And that was invaluable. You know, I wouldn't have known that. They just said, "Whoa, suddenly you're in shape." Or early on in the season, "Bruce, you need to do some work because you are really out of shape." You know, so there's all that goes with it. And we're a social sport. And I can tell you this morning, best part of the run, apart from seeing the sunrise over Johannesburg skyline, and I love Joburg skyline, best part of the run was having coffee with my mates afterwards.
Yeah. Is it true that in some races, if you're running in a cluster, so we're talking about a race this time, not just in preparing, you're running in a cluster, especially if it's windy, that you need to be clear on where you position yourself?
Well, yeah, running etiquette is, there's not a lot of it, but it's basic, to occupy your space a little bit like the cyclist. Hold your line through a corner. Don't suddenly veer off in this direction. Be aware of the people around you. And give them some space. So for me, an invaluable part of my running in my later years was I started doing some track racing, some racing on the track with spikes, which is very, very scary, I can promise you. When you are there, if road running's rock and roll's track is classical, and you really have to belong there. But I used to run some B-League races, and it taught me a lot about the space around me, because when you've got long spikes on your shoes and you can get stuck in the shin with somebody else's spike, or you can stick your spike in somebody else's calf muscle. We touch each other a lot in track races to make each other aware of where we are. And the most famous blunder of when that didn't happen, when two people didn't know where they were, was when Zola Budd and Mary Decker fell over each other in the Olympic final in LA in 1984. But running in a group there will always be that person who crabs slightly and irritates you because they keep running into you and they're unaware of it. Always be that person in the race whose sweat drips off the end of their arm and comes into your face. it's not all fun. But generally, we know where we are in a group.
Wonderful.
We become more and more. Yeah.
Yes. So let's look at what a typical training week, a week of training would look like. What does it look like?
Yeah. So, it's always difficult when you're talking to a mixed group of beginners all the way through to experienced people. As you saw in my book in the early days, and by the way, Zanya, I didn't just record every month. I recorded every single day.
Yes.
About my personality, very, very strange personality. I had every single day from day one, and I've got it down in my diary. But early days was just running, just run. And then try and make it fairly regular, not too much, but just run. But later on, as you become better and you want to improve, then you mix your week. It's not just running. You do some speed work, some quality work. You do possibly a midweek. I mean, when I was at my best, I used to do a Wednesday run, 30 kilometers on a Wednesday evening, at race pace, at Comrades race pace, that would become ingrained in my system. You'll do a long, slow run on the weekend so that you build up endurance. And that's not about how fast you do it. It's about how much time you spend on your legs. And then most runners will try and incorporate some kind of hill training, because even if you're running a fast, flat marathon, hill work makes you incredibly strong. Mm. And strength is the key in marathon running. It's what happens after 32 kilometers. It's that you have the strength to keep going. So you try and incorporate all those elements, and I've left off the most important of all of them, and that is that, as I think I mentioned last week when we spoke, the four-letter swear word, rest. I just hate that word, but actually rest is part of getting fitter. You do not get fitter in a straight line graph, the hypotenuse of a triangle. It doesn't climb up like that. It climbs in steps and plateaus. So you go up step, and then you plateau and hold it at that level, and you rest a bit. Then you go up again, and you hold it at that level. And you rest of it. So that, that's my doorbell ringing. Some people don't answer. I'm in my office. And that's how you get fitter. And you get fitter by resting and allowing your body to recover and to build up and to brace itself for the next step up in fitness.
No, you're spot on. I mean, I love the diary entries. For instance, there's one, there was a December 25th entry. You say, family Christmas lunch, too much eating and drinking, no running. This is the day before. You say, Brescia House run, used new running shorts, so light, I had to check they were still there. So those diary entries are absolutely hilarious.
The early days, we ran in those old rugby shorts.
Yeah.
We had those old rugby shorts, and suddenly we had these flimsy running shorts from America or from Britain or something, and I just couldn't get used to them. I felt naked wearing them, but they were obviously the beginning of the latest trend. Yeah.
So what about diet? Now that we have a sense of what the week is looking like, what about diet? I know Kabelo Mabalane always says 80% of it is food, 20% is working out if you're trying to get fit. So what do you subscribe to?
Well, no, you know, so in those days, because remember, was it Oscar Wilde who said that youth is wasted on the young? I had youth on my side, so I could eat, as you see in the book, my favorite meal was the Wits canteen slop chips and gravy.
Yeah.
If I ate that diet now, I would be the size of a football, you know. So we ate in those days because we just ate, you know. You're youngsters and you're always hungry. Right now, I'm a little bit more, I'm a little bit more on the banting side. I tend to eat more protein, fat and salads and vegetables and things like that, and not as many carbohydrates. And I think particularly when I run on a Saturday and I see all the people out there running, and I feel so sorry for some of the ladies and guys that I see there. They're running, they've got the best intentions, and they're trying to lose weight. And I want to stop them and say no amount of exercise will outdo a bad diet. Mm. So in that sense, I do agree with Cabello. Because you do all that exercise and then you go home to a big high-carb meal with lots of sugars and stuff like that, and you might as well have not run. But for marathon running, when you're at the highest level, I ate. My friends used to say I had a seafood diet, which was that if I saw food, I ate it. I ate a lot in those days. I couldn't eat like that now. My metabolism slowed down.
Yes, yes. A couple of messages and we're going to go to the lines. One says, Bruce is making me all teary. This year would have been my sixth comrades if it wasn't for this pandemic. Miss the torture while training for the big C. Miss my fellow runners. Yeah, nah. This is from Kusekuhle in Cape Town. And then Reiki, you've given us a call. You're in Centurion. Hi, Reiki.
Hi, Azania. Hi, Bruce. I just want to, it was so nice. I got back, off from work and I could hear Bruce's voice, and it took me back to 2003 when I ran my first marathon. I followed Bruce's program in the Runner's World, and I was fascinated by the lots of rest days that there were. And I thought, it's not possible, but it was. So after my two children, I decided I wanted to test my mind, because I still believe it's more mind race than, well, a physical race for me, because I just wanted to finish. I just didn't want a good time. And I followed the program, and I had my rest days, and I finished. I didn't have much time because of the small children. And I finished it in time, and I was so chuffed, and I wasn't even, like, dead. I lost a toenail or two, but it was fantastic. So I want to thank you. You motivated me. I don't know how I would have done it without that program. I promise you, I had no clue.
Well, Reiki, thanks for the call.
Congratulations, but it's time for another one.
No, at 56,
Which direction?
I went down. I ran down because I still have a mental block about uphills. I never run an uphill. I always walk an uphill. All of the
Polly Shorts is calling you, and don't worry about walking uphill. Everybody walks Polly Shorts, except possibly the front few.
Okay.
It's calling.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the call. Thank you very much for the call. All right. So, as she says, she was shocked by the rest, as you, I think, have emphasized over two episodes. So what is the tapering about? Because you say rest taper towards a marathon.
Yeah. So if you're doing an ordinary 10K or a half marathon or whatever, don't worry. Just run your normal, you know, just squeeze that in. But when you're going for a marathon, or particularly an ultra marathon like Comrades, I think that you have to get to the start line very well rested, because it's 90 kilometers of hills up or down. It's brutal. And your legs need to be full of energy and full of spring to take on that challenge. So at the risk of exaggeration, I always used to say you need to get to the start line slightly undertrained and slightly overweight, rather than vice versa. And the way to do that is about 2 weeks before race day, you start to cut your training back drastically.
Mm-hmm.
And you cut it substantially. So I can give you my last week before every Comrades, by the way, that I won. My last week was 10Ks, 8Ks, 5Ks. That's each day. So a 10, an 8, 5, then nothing, 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 and then 90. You see, and the way I say it makes you realize it's 90. And so I would go in with very light running in the last week and 3 days of no running. So that on the start line on race morning, I felt greasy. I felt something's missing in my life. I couldn't work out what it was. And I would understand in the first few strides after the gun had gone that it was running that I was missing.
Ah, you see, and now you were ready to go.
To start the comrade.
Yes,
now
your legs are just itching to go.
Now you're ready to go to war.
Yeah.
Now you're ready to go to war, whether it's against other runners or against the course itself, you're ready because you're so rested.
So, Bruce, what about injuries and setbacks like that on our way to training?
Well, you know, there is nothing bleaker. There is no sadder human being on the planet than a runner who is injured. I mean, and it's happened to all of us. I can give you the dreadful names: plantar fasciitis, chondromalacia patella, iliotibial band friction syndrome. There's just lots of them. And, you know, if you could find the ultimate cure to running injuries, you wouldn't be a billionaire, you'd be a trillionaire, because people would hack a path to your doorway to have this ultimate cure. But generally, injuries are not an act of God. Injuries are there because you did it to yourself, because you did something stupid. And generally with runners, it's that we're not frightened of hard work. You train too hard. And so I came up with a new medical condition, not tonsillitis or anything like that. It's called desperately keen titus. And desperately keen titus hits virtually every runner, but particularly novices. As they start to improve, they get so excited. They get their first medal. They get their first mention in a results sheet. They get patted on the back by members of their running club. They feel like a hero. And so they start training even harder for the next race. And eventually, unfortunately, the body stops you by giving you an injury. And so they're the most frustrating things on the planet. But generally, 99% of the time, you gave that injury to yourself because you were too keen. So the signs to watch out for are when you go out for a run and you have what I also came up with my friend Graham Lindenberg, a term called the plods. The plods, PC plod from Noddy. You've got the plods and you feel like you are plodding along. That's not a great sign. There's no spring in your legs. And so many people, the response to that is to train even harder. And so then you get what's known as the super plod, because now you are really dead. And the actual response, once again, is that four-letter swear word rest. But we are so reluctant to do that. Yeah. And by the way, I can teach this to you for days. You see me try to do it to myself. You see me try and stop. I'll tell you what to do, Azania, but I can't do it. And so you get injured. So once you get injured, the most mature thing to do is to accept that you're injured and to go and get professional help. You've got to go to the physiotherapist and you've got to get sorted out and you've got to take that four-letter swear word rest.
Oh.
And you sort it out.
Yes. Well, Bruce, it's been wonderful going through this book. It's been a breeze to read. I love the notes, the commentary, the details around it. Really, really useful. Absolutely amazing. We have another week, of course, to do this. Thank you for today.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you. That is Bruce Fordyce, and his book is called Winged Messenger, Running Your First Comrades Marathon. And this was episode 3 of our Running Marathon series. We've got our final one next week, so we're going to put it on Wednesday instead of Tuesday, because Tuesday is a public holiday. So make a point. Just make an appointment with us on that Wednesday at 1:30.